Broadcast from the centre of England, this is the McGowan episode of Waffle On. Hello and welcome to the Waffle On podcast. My name is Meds and today I am joined by our regular guest host, Mr. Mark Kelly.
Word up.
Hey, how you doing over there, my friend?
Not bad.
Okay, we're actually going to be doing this podcast over Skype, so I apologise beforehand if the audio quality is a bit naff. We will be doing our regular podcasts sitting next to each other, but you're about 20 miles away, aren't you?
About 20 miles away.
Excellent. Yep. Excellent. Okay, this is not the first Waffle On podcast, which we said was going to be devoted to Red Dwarf. Alas, no. That's going to be in about 2 weeks' time. This is a podcast dedicated to Patrick McGowan, who died the other week. That was a bit unexpected, wasn't it, Kel?
It was, because he hadn't heard nothing for about 5 months. And with the new series coming up as well, you thought, oh, he's going to make some kind of statement. And then all of a sudden, this all happened. It's a bit of a shock, really.
It was a bit of a shock. I mean, it was you who let me know.
It was, yeah. Good old teletext.
So you got it by teletext and then text it to me.
Yeah, there you go. Don't know who needs the internet these days. Good old teletext. Old school teletext.
I love teletext. Okay, brilliant. So what we'll do, we're just going to... this is a brief bio. I suppose you could call it an obituary, really, nowadays, of Patrick McGowan. Okay, so Patrick McGowan was born on March the 19th, 1928. He was born in Astoria, Queens, New York City. Which I didn't know, actually.
I didn't know that.
But I mean, when I was younger, I honestly thought he was English, but clearly not. He was American. Shortly after he was born, McGowan's parents moved back to Ireland, and 7 years later, they moved to good old Sheffield in England. With the outbreak of World War II in 1939, I like the way that's put. I mean, as if we don't know with World War II. Oh, well, there you go. McGowan was evacuated to Leicestershire, and there he attended Radcliffe College, where he excelled in mathematics and boxing. This is something that me and you could talk about at the end of this with his boxing. McGowan left school at age 16 and returned to Sheffield, where he worked in various jobs such as a chicken farmer and a bank clerk. He later became a stage manager at Sheffield Repertory Theatre. When one of the actors became ill, Patrick filled in, launching his acting career. He fell for an actress named Joan Drummond, the woman to whom he reportedly wrote love letters nearly every day. Oh. Do you do that with your good lady?
Nope.
There you go. Neither do I. They were married between a rehearsal of The Taming of the Shrew and an evening performance on May the 19th, 1951. They subsequently had three daughters, Catherine, Anne, Frances. In 1955, McGowan starred in a West End production of a play called Serious Charge in the role of a priest accused of being gay. Orson Welles was so impressed by McGowan's stage presence that he cast him as Starbuck in his York Theatre production of Moby Dick Rehearsed. Do you think that's where they got Starbuck from, for BSG?
I thought, I don't remember that. I'm a big fan of BSG. I don't remember Patrick McGowan being in it. But you do learn something every day.
Now, there you go. You see, now, wouldn't that have been good if it wasn't Benedict coming back and instead of the gorgeous female Starbuck, you would have had Patrick McGowan?
Oh, that's very interesting.
It probably isn't, though. That's just probably a totally random... random statement.
Yeah, it could be. That's quite actually, yeah. Let's not dig ourselves a hole.
Not
this early in the podcast, anyway.
He did some films for the Rank organisation, mainly the gritty Hell Drivers film, which both me and you are a big fan of.
Oh yes, oh yes.
We'll talk about Hell Drivers in a mo. He left Rank. I don't think he got on very well with them, which doesn't surprise you because he's a pretty hard thinking kind of guy. So free of his contract, he did some TV work and continued on the stage in his favourite role in Ibsen's Brand, for which he received an award. Soon, producer Lou Grade approached him about a TV series in which he would play a spy named John Drake. Having learned from his experiences at the Rank organisation, McGoohan insisted on several conditions in his contract before agreeing to do the show. All of the fistfights should be different, the character would always use his brain before using a gun, and much to the horror of the executives, no kissing. McGoohan spent some time working for Disney on The Three Lives of Thomasina and Dr. Sin alias the Scarecrow. He'd already turned down the role of James Bond, probably for the reason of the kissing scenario, and also Simon Templar. Which rumour has it, and I do state this is rumour, was because of the fact that he didn't see the Saint driving a Volvo. Ooh. I mean, what can you say about that? Yeah. Probably true, though. I mean, would you really see a spy driving a Volvo?
Unless he was Swedish, maybe.
Unless he was Swedish. Yeah, you never know.
Probably give it away, that, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, come on. I mean, you walk around saying your name's Bond, James Bond. I mean, you know, that's not really giving it away, is it? And as the Simon Templar, every time you walk around, suddenly a halo appears above your head.
That's true.
There you go. Okay, so after doing those films and doing Danger Man, he became slightly disenchanted with that. After two episodes of Colour, he told Lou Grade he didn't want to do any more. And Lou Grade turned around and said, knowing that McGoohan, being the highest paid actor in the UK and also drawing in the crowd, didn't want to lose him, so asked him to come up with something. This is where McGoohan came up with the idea, along with George Markstein, of The Prisoner. Now, we're not going to go into The Prisoner because that's a podcast devoted to himself, but I'm a big fan of it, and you're not so much a big fan of it, are you?
Yeah, I like it, but I'm not an obsessive like you.
Cheers. Okay. McGoohan appeared in many films, including Howard Hughes' favourite Ice Station Zebra. We'll talk about that one again as well. For which he was critically acclaimed, and Silver Streak with the great Gene Wilder and the late Richard Pryor. In 1977, he starred in the TV series Rafferty, playing a former army doctor who had retired and moved into a private practice. And many people consider this as a forerunner to the House MD. He was most recognised by a later generation of fans as the Machiavellian King Edward Longshanks from the 1995 Oscar winner Braveheart. In 1996, he appeared as Judge Omar Noose in A Time to Kill. Other programmes that he came into at that point was, of course, Columbo, with his longtime friend Peter Falk. He appeared in five Columbo episodes, including three of the four in which he played the murderer, and wrote and produced two, including one of those. He also appeared in the 1981 film Scanners, a science fiction horror film by Canadian director David Cronenberg that has since attained cult movie status.
Deservedly so as well.
And deservedly so. I mean, anything where you just people's heads just explode, you know, it's going to be good. In 2000, he reprised his role as number six in an episode of of The Simpsons. I was going to say the Primpsons then. You could tell I'm reading this, can't you? The computer war many sues, in which Homer Simpson concocts a news story to make his website more popular, and he wakes up in a prison disguised as a holiday resort, dubbed Number 5, and he befriends Number 6 and escapes with his boat. McGoohan's last film was a voice role in the animated film Treasure Planet, released in 2002, and that same year he received the Prothmesis Hall of Fame Award for The Prisoner. Sadly, Patrick McGoohan died on the 13th of January 2009 at Sir John's Health Centre in Santa Monica, California, following a brief illness. At the time of his death, McGoohan was mostly retired and living in LA with his wife of 57 years, Joan Drummond. Okay, so that's the brief bio of Patrick McGoohan. Kel, your thoughts on the great Patrick McGoohan?
Well, I like Patrick McGoohan. I'm not in your ballpark of worshipping the man, but it reminds me of 10 years of wasted education, of leaving school early to go and watch Prisoner videos, then DVDs, and then Ice Dave Zebra, and then Hal Drivers. So whether I like him or not, I just know a lot about him. And Hal Drivers is a great film.
Oh, but I mean,
great film.
Are you saying that I am responsible for you working in a rubbish job? Yeah. Oh, right, okay. Hold on a minute. Well, I blame you for us watching zombie films and Star Trek.
Yep, microchip breakfasts.
Ah, microchip and toast. So, and Hell Drivers, of course, we named our band Hell Drivers.
Oh, that was a very short-lived band, though, wasn't it?
Well, it was very short-lived. It was rubbish, and I don't think we got outside the rehearsal studios.
Technically, you know, it was a super group, because we knew it was two other groups who formed together.
That was true, and the other one was called Lee Van Cleef.
Lee Van Cleef, yes, it was a super group.
So, Hell Drivers. Why is Hell Drivers one of your top-notch films?
Just because, I think mainly just because someone tells you the film, you think, wow, how are they going to make a gritty film about lorry drivers?
Mm.
And it is so gritty, so exciting, and it's just the side of Britain that you're not used to seeing, like the working class man doing a hard job in hard situations.
Yeah.
And I just think it's got everything going for it, and it's like, it's one of them films so good, you just don't want to see it remade. And there's not many films like that back in from the 1950s.
Mm.
It's just a great, great movie.
It was about, I think it was made in 1957, wasn't it?
1957, such a tough film for 1957. It's like in America, they've got Convoy. In this country, we've got Hell Drivers.
Yeah.
The only two films about lorry drivers I can think of.
I think the thing with Hell Drivers is, as you say, it's got that gritty realism, especially of what England was like at that point. I mean, it's after the war. I mean, Britain didn't recover really from the war for a good, well, probably to the 60s, really.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Hell Drivers. Stanley Baker was the main character in that. Patrick McGoohan played Red. I mean, you look at the list of actors on this, and I'll just read you a couple of the people out. I mean, again, bearing in mind this is 1957, you've got Stanley Baker, who probably became more famous, I should think, with Zulu. Herbert Lom was in it. William Hartnell, obviously, who became the first Doctor Who. Sid James, in a very serious role, before we knew him as the Carry On films. Gordon Jackson. David McCallum, and probably the most surprising one of these was Sean Connery.
That's right, he's in it, a small part, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, and he's got hair.
Was it a wig then?
You know what, this was a fairly low-budget film by Cy Enfield. I honestly can't see them. I mean, yes, Stanley Baker, if he had to wear a wig or a hairpiece, then I could understand it, but... He's not high on the list of characters, and I think if they were going to look for someone with a with a decent haircut, I think they'd just go and get somebody else. No, I think it is actually his own hair.
Mm.
I think he dies in that as well, Patrick McGee. Doesn't he drive the lorry over the cliff?
He drives off the end, yeah, that's what happens, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Now, we'll briefly talk about... The Danger Man and Prisoner. Obviously, not going to go into great detail because we'll be talking about that in a few episodes' time. But what do you think of McGoohan's performance as a main character in those two TV series?
Well, I think he's one of these actors. He's subtly over the top, if you know what I mean by that.
Yeah,
he's very over the top, but he plays it, and it's all like I like it because there's a lot of inner rage with him, and he's raging at everyone in the prison, especially a prisoner. That's what I got from that. It was quite a counterculture program.
Yeah.
I think it was seen in the country like that, wasn't it? That it was a lot, you know, there was a lot going on in the world, and you saw that, and I like the way he did a lot with his eyes.
Mm.
But then also he'd have his the most over the top fighting I think we've ever saw.
Me and you did give, I think we did crown him as king of the television fighters, along with, who were the others?
Roy Thins. Invaders.
Yeah. William Shatner.
William Shatner. Tony Todd.
And Tony Todd, but only for the remake of Knights of the Living Dead, purely for his rolling down a hill.
Yeah, no one will be William Shatner in Star Trek when he threw himself, his massive weight, across a desk. He'd become a projectile. There's not many actors who use themselves as a weapon.
Well, I remember me and you actually sat down and watched an episode of The Prisoner, an episode of Star Trek. I think the Star Trek one was the one where there was Evil Kirk, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I ain't got to go. And the other one was Roy Thins. And now I think I voted against you on this because Roy Thins actually launched himself vertically across a load of filing cabinets in The Invaders. Now, I'm not being funny, but if you're going to have a row on somebody and they can vertically fly across a load of filing cabinets at you, I'd be worried.
Yeah.
I mean, this is slightly off tangent, but okay. If you've got Roy Thins and Patrick McGuinn and William Shatner in a fight in a ring, who's going to win?
I don't know, but that's a lot of man. That's an awful lot of man in one ring. Now, you shouldn't be laughing there. It's not that kind of podcast. But
I'm keeping that in.
I think William Shatner could probably take more blows than the other two. He had more girth, didn't he?
In a ring.
Yeah.
Right.
And also, he had a girdle on. Was he wearing a girdle? Are you talking, is his post-girdle or pre-girdle?
Well, no, because, I mean, Shatner didn't wear a girdle until T.J. Hooker, in which he, of course, decided wearing a different hairpiece. And so he was a totally different man. So maybe his ring days were over by that point.
But if he was as T.J. Hooker, he'd have an awful lot of safety kit there. He'd have his hair, that would protect his head, his wig, and his girdle would protect his gut. So in a fight, I'd pick T.J. Hooker.
Oh, well, I think Hooker would be disqualified then, really, because Roy Thins was just he's the little finger scenario. As Big Pat McGowan, well, he could take on four or five people in one time. That's what you got to think about it.
And drink the top shelf in a bar.
Oh, well, yeah, and take on a big weather balloon.
Yeah.
I think it's Pat McGowan.
That would be. What about T.J. Hooker versus Captain Kirk?
I don't know. That's something we're going to have to bring up when we talk about T.J. Hooker.
Mm.
Okay, remember that. Remember that, because we are going to be doing T.J. Hooker. And I think that's one we'll that's one we'll save. Make a note of that.
I'll make a mental note of that.
So no, write it down. I know what your memory's like.
This is true. I will write it down.
Now, going back on to Patrick McGuinn, some of his later films. I mean, I don't suppose you did see Dr. Sin Alias the Scarecrow.
No, I haven't saw that one, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was probably one of the first things I saw him after The Prisoner. He's probably before I saw Ice Station Zebra. Now, Ice Station Zebra is famous for one particular scene, and that scene is when he does a face-off between him and Rock Hudson.
And that scene is?
Punching of the desk.
Because, and that story comes about is Rock Hudson apparently was a little bit undermined by McGowan's brashness, and when McGowan punches a desk, he punches a desk, and of course Rock Hudson punches a desk, and it's a bit feeble, really. It's not very good. So Ice Station Zebra, that was 1968, and he decided doing Columbo, and then Silver Streak, and you love Silver Streak.
It's got the man Richard Pryor in the legend. That's Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder.
What was it? What did he play in Silver Streak? Was he just like a gangster or something, or someone who?
That's a good point. Actually, it's been a long time since I think he was like because after The Prisoner, he seems to always play the same kind of role. A suited villain.
Yeah, Roger Devereux, he played in that. Not that I'm looking this up by any means.
I was going to say you're quick on the lady.
And because Ned Beatty was in it as well, and Clifton James. Oh, Clifton James, who was. Didn't Clifton James play the guy in Bond? No, it wasn't, was it?
That's an answer. I'm not. You're Mr. Bond, so.
Yes, it was. It was Sheriff J.W. Pepper.
Oh, yeah. Oh, classic.
Is it classic? Yeah. Would you class.
Well, it's classic. No, it's classic enough. Yeah.
But when he's.
That's more than we'll ever
do. But when he's actually playing another sheriff. You've got, I mean, that is serious typecasting, isn't it? Who can we get to play a sheriff? I know, we'll get the bloke who played Pepper. Now, I think he's one of his best films he ever did was Escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, yes.
Explain.
Well,
I mean, why you think, why he's brilliant.
I don't know. I just think it's the archetypal escape movie, and he's the archetypal villain who you want in a prison movie.
Yeah.
That's got everything you want from a prison movie. It might be a complete load of rubbish, but we'll never know. And that's what's good about it. But he's just got such menace in that film. You'd never, in the real world, I don't think any wardens of a prison would be like him.
No.
But it doesn't matter. 'Cause it doesn't matter.
He's not interested at all in rehabilitation. Or anything. He's
just wants retribution.
Yeah, I mean that character. I mean on IMBD, he just says warden. He doesn't even say a name. So that actually sums up that he is playing authority.
Yeah, definitely.
As Clint Eastwood is obviously the escapee in that. After that, he did another film that you love, Scanners.
That is a classic film. Mainly because, as well as Patrick, we got Michael Ironside in. It was like a B-movie legend.
Oh, 1981 this film is as well.
Yeah, and you know, after that, he got the part of V from Scanners.
What, Michael Ironside? Yep. Really?
Yeah, I was watching V very recently.
Yeah, I always think Michael Ironside as a stand-in Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, he is, obviously. He's a poor man's Jack Nicholson, isn't he?
Yeah. We then go on to, after Scanners, he did a film called Kings and Desperate Men. Now, this is an unusual film. Directed by Alexis Khanna, who was a character in the rebellious character in The Prisoner. Now, the important thing about Kings and Desperate Men is this is virtually Die Hard. Some people say that Die Hard is just a remake of Kings and Desperate Men. I've not actually seen it because I've been trying to get hold of it on DVD, and I don't think it's available. I've seen really dodgy copies of VHS tapes, but I haven't even got a VHS recorder anymore.
You got a synopsis on that film?
Kings and Desperate Men, yeah, why not? Hold on, let's have a look.
What's it say about that then? Why is it so much? Why do I reckon Die Hard?
Well, because it's the whole thing. Alexis Khanna takes McGowan's like a disc jockey in it, and he gets taken over by terrorists, which is by Alexis Khanna. Yeah, I'll read it out. On the eve of Christmas, an urbane, loutish, and acidly cynical Montreal radio talk show host, played by Patrick McGowan, is taken hostage in his own studio by a band of crusading terrorists who want a new on-the-air trial of a comrade they feel was wrongly convicted. For collateral, the terrorists have also taken hostage his rich wife and mentally retarded son in their own home. The listening audience shall act as the jury and phone in their verdicts. As the trial progresses, disembodied voices, Christmas hymns, religious imagery, and one of the terrorists relating the story of the wind in the willows, the voice of a child singing Come All Ye Faithful in Latin, reflects the psyche of these characters in the moments of truth. All the while, the talk show host must sustain the role of grand showman and project his wit and cavillianess to the listening audience despite the tense situation. Captor and captive engage in a furious battle of wits. So, in essence, it is. You think about Die Hard, it's Christmas Eve. A load of people take hostage people for what Alan Rickman says is for their, you know, cousins, you know, in a different country.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's exactly the same. If you think, remember in Die Hard, you've got the camera crew go to Bruce Willis's family's home and start trying to interview him, because it is quite similar.
Bloody hell, that is very interesting. Never heard about that
and
before.
That does sound like a wicked film.
It does sound like a good film, especially because you cannot imagine Patrick McGowan playing records.
I don't think he's going to be playing stuff like modern day stuff. Well, that was 1981, so he'd be playing The Specials or Madness. Nah.
Yeah, just can't imagine that. It's not, isn't it?
Okay, so he did some TV stuff after that. Murder, She Wrote. Let's not go there. Columbo, no. Which we talked about briefly. I think Braveheart is probably the most thing Patrick McGowan's been famous for, apart from The Prisoner. Now, we both have opinions on Braveheart, which is basically Mel Gibson cannot make anything historical at all.
Scottish propaganda.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, even the Scottish people get brassed off with Mel Gibson, because, you know, we all know the story of William Wallace. He didn't get as far as York, I don't think. But
you got to Carlo.
Yeah, and so, I mean, he's not a... Well, you know, we're not talking about Mel Gibson, but let's just say, historically, he is an arse.
I like his films, but there's a lot going on in that head of his.
Well, not his later films. I mean, let's face it, Mad Max is fantastic. Payback I quite like, even though that's a remake of one of your favourite films.
Yeah,
but what else has he done that's any good then?
Apocalypto is a fantastic...
That's still egotistical though, isn't it?
It is, but it's very enjoyable. I don't want to talk about The Passion of the Christ, because that's just...
Well, no, that was just a horror film. I mean, there was no...
It was
just a gore movie. We're not going to talk about religion by any means, but, you know, that film, it means a lot to a lot of people, but, you know, well, the story of Christ, and then suddenly to have really just Oh, it was just blood and ooze, man. Hey, that man needs to sort his brain out because it just went on. Anyway, back to Braveheart. yeah, playing Longshanks. I think he says the best line, I think, in probably it's got to be in one of the top 20 lines when he turns around and says, "The only trouble with Scotland is it's full of Scots."
That's a great line.
I mean, I wouldn't. I don't agree with that because I you know, Scottish people are Scottish and great. But for a bastard King Edward that he was,
yeah, he was not a nice
man. He was a horrible piece of work. And what a great nose! I know this is a slight strange thing to say, but I'm sure it was a pathetic nose.
That's a good point. Actually, top of me, I can't remember his nose.
Yeah, he was a bit. Oh, it's not that kind.
Funny that.
Yeah. Yeah, for best nose, the winner is.
This shows how much you're obsessed with him. You can remember his nose from about 10 years
ago. Oh yeah, and nose and hair, and killing his son's lover, throwing him out the window, I do believe, which is a bit harsh. But I suppose he was a bit annoyed that his son was gay. But there you go. He did a few films after that, A Time to Kill, which he played the judge. I think that was probably the last. Big film he did, and I think the last two things he did was in The Simpsons and Treasure Planet playing Billy Bones. It was a shock to see him in The Simpsons.
Yeah, I think I saw that Simpsons episode. I can't think off the top of my head. Is it been on in England?
Yeah, it's been on quite. I mean, it was in 2000. That was made. You can see it on YouTube anyway.
Oh, it's on YouTube.
It's just through his voice, but you know, because of the fact that he was so. I mean, you can imagine him getting annoyed by having to talk about number six all the time. So I think it was fair play for him for doing that. Okay, so that was our little tribute there to the great Patrick McGoohan. We should also point out as well the sad loss of Ricardo Montalban, who was most well known for playing the character of Khan in the Star Trek TV series and also Star Trek The Wrath of Khan. And also in Fantasy Island, he passed away last week. And for British viewers, a great sad loss to us all of the children's TV presenter, Tony Hart. Kel, Tony Hart was pretty big for us, wasn't he?
Oh, when we were growing up, he was your only interaction with art apart from being at school.
Mm.
So, and it had Morph on it. That's why most people watched it, was Morph.
Morph and Chaz. And I do believe I might be slightly wrong here, and I'm not going to look it up, but I'm sure the people who did Morph was the people who do it's Wallace and Gromit.
Nick Park,
yeah. So I mean, Tony Hart is also, you might as well say, responsible for Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run and stuff like that. A great sad loss. And I mean, we talked about this earlier on today, where for an artist, he actually became ill a few years ago with a heart attack and lost the use of his hands, which is such a sad thing to think about, isn't it, really?
It's like you without your mobile phone.
What do you mean it's like me without my mobile phone?
It's like if you lost your mobile phone, what would you do?
Well, I'd buy another one.
You wouldn't? What about if you lost your fingers?
Well, I'd get one of them voice-activated ones.
See, this is it, sir. Even when you lost, you still find a way of using your phone. You could be a head in a bed like the Metallica 1 video. And you'd still be using your phone.
Well, look, if you're a head in a bed, you can still watch telly. And that's what this podcast is all about. So that's the end of this special episode. Thanks for joining us. Kel, it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
It's okay, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Well, yeah. And we'll be back in hopefully 2 weeks' time with the episode of Red Dwarf, which I'm really looking forward to. Are you?
Yes. Now, talk about wasted youth. Red Dwarf is wasted youth of us two.
I think we can safely say that. Generally, considering this podcast is voted to classic TV from 1960 to 1990, we've spent an awful lot of our time wasting our life in front of a television.
Oh, and I'm still carrying it on.
Yeah, yes, we must keep it going.
Keep the faith.
That's been it. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you all for the Red Dwarf episode. Cheerio.
Goodbye.
This episode of Waffle On was presented by Simon Meddings and Mark Kelly. Waffle On is copyrighted by Simon Meddings. The theme tune is by Simon Wood.